now, 408. I hope
Love
so.
Talk
Let me see.
Radio.
Sharon, yes. She's here.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2617. That's 2617. Tonight, we're going to have a very good show. Sharon Higdon-Jones is on, and I really like it when she comes on. She's so knowledgeable. And we always have a very good show when she's here. And so she is a psychotherapist, and she's from California. And she's been for over 35 years with individuals, with couples and families. She counsels them who have been experiencing the trauma of abuse. So she knows a lot about child abuse, and she herself is a survivor. So I'm really happy that she's here. We're starting to build a panel. This is good. Everyone call in, for God's sake. If you have answers or questions, you want answers, this is the one to call, all right? Call Sharon Higdon-Jones. She's very, very good. Yes, sir. All right. I have the NASCA statement here. I want to read it, the mission statement. Number one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. Presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic. We know that's worldwide, okay? Number two, offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery, okay? And we do have a single purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to child abuse, and that's trauma, including sexual assault, violent, or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways, and that's the ones that I just read. So there you go. We have a lot more, though, that I want to talk about. We have a nice panel building up here. I like this. But do call in. I have room for about maybe three more. So it's 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And the reason why I want to talk to you just for a second, okay, we're going through horrific times right now. We all know this. Everyone's quite scared, I suppose. I don't know. Filled with fear. And it seems like when there's problems like that, which we are experiencing, those who suffer from PTSD, I was on the phone until I don't know what time. I had four phone calls last night. And a couple of them were about PTSD, and also, which I, of course, know about, is the complex PTSD, you know, and this is something that maybe we could talk a little bit about tonight, and the clusters. A lot of us have knowledge about that, but there are a lot of people out there that don't understand the clusters and how it affects us, okay? And I think that's a very good topic to start out with. So I just want you to know that that Sharon is here now, and her mic is open. Sharon, hello.
Hello from California, and post-traumatic stress is an important topic. I was thinking as you were talking about that we are in the throes of this pandemic, and of course the other pandemic is abuse, and I think for all the people who don't understand what it's like, everybody can relate to going through the pandemic as we are going through it now, you know, the physical, the viral pandemic. But for people who have been abused, it is like a pandemic internally that goes on until the healing occurs, right? And so
right.
It's long, it's tedious, it's difficult, it's grueling, it's all of the things, that the words that we associate. So I just was thinking of that as you mentioned the word, talked about pandemic. We're also in two pandemics right now, pandemic of abuse and the pandemic of coronavirus.
Yeah, we sure are. We sure are. There's just all different kinds of things that are, causing a lot of gloom and doom. Our country's in trouble. You know, people are coming through the border. They're filled. A lot of them are sick. We don't need any more sickness in our country because of the COVID. We don't need this. And we don't need criminals. We don't need more drugs. We don't need any of this stuff that's going on. And there's a lot of heavy, trafficking. That's something that's terrible. That is something that I know about. And I had a friend who was trafficked out. And just the thought of all this trafficking going on is just horrific, okay? It's horrendous. And there's so many things that, you watch the news, you see it, you hear about it, you can't get away from it. You go outside on a sunny day and you think, pandemic, where is it as far as the COVID? You want to take a deep breath and you think, maybe I shouldn't have done that. I don't know. Who knows? They don't know, okay? And see, that creates a problem too because they don't know. If they don't know, then how are we supposed to know? And then they talk about wearing double masks. I'm not wearing a double mask. I have trouble breathing with one mask. Why would I wear a double mask? I wouldn't be around as part of the statistics in the world if I did that. So, it's a hard time for a lot of people. And I receive a lot of phone calls. Last night I got 4. The night before it was 3. And, I do hear from a lot of people who are really, really filled with stress. And rightfully so. It's rightfully so. So a lot of these people are suffering from PTSD. I was explaining the cluster effect to them. But you're here tonight, and I want you maybe we could start out with this. And if you want to change the subject at any given time, we can do this. And but maybe you, okay, all right, can explain the clusters, what that means exactly, so that other people who are listening will have a better understanding. Go ahead.
Are you talking, I'm not sure about what you're talking about. Are you talking about the cluster of symptomology?
PTSD.
PTSD.
Yeah, how it affects our life and so forth, reliving the events, through occurring nightmares, how that affects us, avoiding reminders, being on guard of hypervigilance. Of course, you and I know that. But people with PTSD may have low self-esteem, psychological problems such as depression. That's one we should zero in on because right now people are so horribly depressed. They're horribly depressed.
Absolutely. And, and the negative beliefs and expectations that come out of having an experience of abuse, the numbing. And I think that, when you were talking about the fears that we're all living in now, I think so much of trauma is contained in our bodies and on a very deep level. And so when we tune in to television or the newscast or whatever, and that vigilance comes up, right? Because there's nothing more, no one more vigilant than somebody who's been abused as a child. It's built into our systems, whether we want it or not. I mean, I can hear every little odd movement outside of our house. I'm better than a watchdog. So we're very tuned into that. And I think what happens is during a time of crisis, like our country is in right now, we go through this crisis, we hear it, and all of that comes up to the surface. And sometimes it's very rational, and it makes a lot of sense. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's exaggerated because we're tying into all of that stuff that has been contained and held on from the past that has not been processed yet, right? Whether it's memories or physical effects, whatever it happens to be. So when you're talking about PTSD, what we're talking about is the trauma is not over when the trauma is over. that it has negative lasting effects that are down inside of us in different layers, unconscious levels, preconscious levels, and some of it that we're very well aware of. And it can be triggered. Like one of my first Vietnam veteran clients that I ever saw, and it was that typical thing that we've read about in the top textbooks. But I have to tell you, when it happened, when my client was sitting in my office, it was night, and a car backfired. He was off that couch and crawled into a corner so fast that I couldn't even process what was happening. It happens. It's automatic, and that's what happens with post-traumatic stress. It triggers all of that stuff that is the same for most of us, and it's also very individual, you know, as you were talking about, Carol. And I'm sure with the calls that you've been having, you've seen the sameness of it, right? The vigilance, the depression, anxiety, so many things that we all share. And then it's individual to each of us, given whatever our experience is. You know, I was first abused that I'm aware of when I was very young. And there was a Chinese mask on the wall. And I used to have nightmares about this Chinese mask and didn't know what it related to until pieces started coming together and so on. But what I noticed is I went into I'm a real antiquer, and I go into an antique store, and they were very common to see these Chinese ceremonial masks. And I would see one, and I would get a visceral response. I felt like I couldn't breathe. You know, I could feel it in my body. I could get hot very rapidly. I need to go outside. And I didn't know what it was. And all I had to do was catch a little view of that mask, and it would put me back in time, like the backfiring did with the Vietnam vet, right? Like the fears that are going on now. It can just put us back into that time. And so what happens is we experience those things in the here and now. So they're very real and they're very strong.
Right. I think I heard Pamela. I'm going to Pamela from Louisiana is here, and she's a board member as well as I am. Yes, we're echoing. I don't know why. There's two of me. But anyway, we wouldn't want two of me, believe me. But anyway, the point is Pamela from Louisiana is here, and she's an ambassador. And we also have Peter from Canada. And we have Mark from Louisiana, okay, Louisiana. And, by the way, they are husband and wife. Yes, they are. So he's going to be my co-host tonight. And we have, of course, Sharon here. I'm going to give out the telephone number. That's 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. If you have any questions, okay, about the things that we go through, a lot of us are very up to date with what we go through. But we have Sharon here, and Sharon is very good. I love having a show with Sharon on because she is so knowledgeable, you know. And we can sit and have really good conversations. And but there's a lot of people out there that don't understand, or maybe they're still bashful, okay, about what happened to them, or they feel like they're filled with shame, or maybe I could have stopped it somehow, or, you know, or whatever's been fed to them. By the perpetrators, you know, the ones that victimized them. And, of course, we were victims. We were just children. This was not our fault. So when we have shows like this, we have people many times listening for the very first time, and they listen through their computers. And so, you know, anyone out there, if you should happen to feel a need to ask a question, you can call this number. I'll give it again. That's 646-595-2118. And we have someone here very special who can answer a lot of your questions. Yes, she can. So there you go. So, Pamela, were you trying to say something? I heard something, but I don't know what it was.
Well, I'd like to say something. Hi, Dr. How do you want to be addressed, Dr. Higgins?
How about
Sharon?
Okay. Just call Sharon, she said, yeah.
Just call me Sharon.
Okay. I'm Pamela Loughridge. I'm an MSW, and I'm, you know, with NASCA, the Director of Communications, and like Carol said, I just came on board as a board member with the NASCA group. And I host on Wednesday night. And my question to you is, coming from a sexual abuse situation for 14 years when I was a child, and also being a social worker, I would like to ask you, back in the day, bipolar, they didn't know much about it, and they didn't have the right, a lot of meds, and people didn't want to get on lithium. But has that same thing happened with PTSD now? Are there more things that, because I used to think PTSD was pretty intractable, that there was nothing really you could do about it. But, bring us up to the 21st century with PTSD, if you don't mind.
Okay. I was having a little bit of difficulty hearing it. Are you saying that you were under the understanding that in the past there was nothing you could do, that if you had PTSD, it was going to be that was the another price that you were paying for your traumatic experience, but that today we can do things about PTSD? And yes, absolutely, we can. We've learned a lot certainly through neuroscience and so on. But I know even through different kinds of therapies, certainly with EMDR, with talk therapy, group therapy, all the different therapies that are available, I absolutely know and believe that, yes, in fact, you can. But it takes diligence on the part of all of us who have been abused to stay with a particular therapy, to hang in with it, and to know that on the other side of it, we can minimize the effects. We can change the results in our brains, in a sense. And we have evidence that shows that now. So it's a very hopeful time. And, of course, the most hopeful thing is the fact that we're talking about it. We're talking about abuse. We're coming forth and saying, I am a survivor and I've gone through this and you're not alone. That's number one. Number two, there's help available. There are techniques available. And three, yes, absolutely, we can change our physiological response, our psychological response to trauma. We can bring it down. We can turn the heat down, in a sense. If we're going to be doing that in terms of any kind of therapy, the first thing is to identify what our triggers are. What is it that causes you in particular to have whatever it is, any symptoms that you have, whether it's vigilance, whether it's being overly stimulated, whether it's sexualizing certain things, whatever it happens to be that you can identify, wow, I think this is because I was abused in some way, and then it's starting to work on that. And I'm a little biased, but I think we're very fortunate now. We have a lot of people who are very trained in working with trauma, and of course one of the best assists that we can have is a support system like through NASCA and so on, because we're all experts. We've all been through healing, and we know the healing that comes just from being together and talking about it. So that was probably a long-winded answer, but yes, I feel so hopeful. From when I started working with abuse, I started working on my own back in the 70s, but when I started professionally working with abuse, I was looking at it today, and it was 1980. And I have to tell you what we have learned since then, what we have gotten the courage to do since then is it's just stunning, and it's amazing, and we have, all of us have reason to hope. So I hope that answers a little bit what you were asking.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite book, or did you write a book about PTSD and how the do you have a good book? Do you have a referral for a good book?
Obviously I'm going to refer you to my own, but I wrote a book called Healing Steps. And there is a whole section in the book about post-traumatic stress, and it defines it. It talks about several different techniques and ways to work with PTSD and to identify your triggers. So obviously I'm going to suggest that. Courage to Heal, of course, is a wonderful book, and Courage to Heal also has a large section on post-traumatic stress.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I was gonna get to your book in a few minutes because I want to discuss that too, and because you also have a workbook as well. Pamela too is an author. We're authors on this show. There's myself, there's you, there's Pamela, and so anyway, we also have Peter, and I know he might have something he wants to ask you, or maybe a, you know, a comment. Go ahead, Peter.
G'day and good evening, everybody. G'day, Sharon. I hope this question is that I'm going to ask is somewhat reasonable. With the PTSD, could you feel like answer in a way that PTSD is, as far as PTSD is concerned, is it not just based on those who have been involved in war, or is PTSD, what's the main trigger for PTSD? Is it just for those who have been in the war, or it can be for anybody?
Thank you, Peter. Hello, Peter. Thank you for your question. No, it is not only for people in the war. I think that's when people, psychologists and psychiatrists and people and neurologists started looking at post-traumatic stress was because of veterans coming back from the war. But PTSD is associated with any singular or multiple traumatic event that actually results in changing the brain's chemistry. So we go through a flight or freeze response anytime something traumatic happens to us. So obviously any kind of abuse is traumatic. We don't know how to deal with that. We're not adapted to that. It's not something that is part of our repertoire. So our anxiety level comes in. We go into, I've got to survive this somehow. And it has an effect on our brain chemistry. So anything that is traumatic, a car accident, certainly any kind of abuse, certainly war, possibly the pandemic and losing loved ones, anything that is violence, being mugged, anything that is traumatic, meaning out of the ordinary, which causes us to go into some kind of a defensive response that we are not equipped to deal with, can result in PTSD. And then the degree to which is different based on a lot of other different variables too. Depends on our age, our previous experience, the level to which we are violated. There are a lot of different things that can all add up. And depending on how resilient we are, we found out that one of the biggest variables to determine the extent of PTSD is not only what happens on the outside, but it's also who we are on the inside. In other words, we believe that certain people are genetically predisposed. My thoughts are getting out of my mouth. Some people are more resilient than others, just genetically more resilient. So that comes into play too in terms of our own levels of sensitivity and what we're able to cope with and manage. That does not mean to repress something. It just means how are we able to incorporate that and make some kind of sense out of that. So you can see why violence against a child is so traumatic. I mean, who amongst us are equipped to deal with something like that? What kind of a category do you put that in? What kind of experience do you have in dealing with that? There's obviously a huge power differential. So given all those factors right there, you can see why it's traumatic. So it doesn't have to be war. It could be anything that is shocking to the human system, and it creates a change in our brain, and it calls us to defend ourselves or care for ourselves in a way that we're not equipped to do so. Mm-hmm. So
okay.
I hope that kind of does that explain it? Yeah.
Yeah, that does explain very well. Probably the second question I want to ask, I hope this doesn't sound too silly, but now somehow I was diagnosed with PTSD back in when I was living in Kitchener Waterloo here in Ontario back in 2010, 2011. The question is that how does one know if you are PTSD? I mean, you know, I had this social worker come straight out with it after what I had, because I didn't share my abuse until I was in my early 30s, I think 35, I believe, and the counselor said to me, "Then you're suffering PTSD," but like I was never given a blood test to see, you know, on a blood test or how is there some kind of specific test to actually know of one's person who is PTSD?
No, there's not a, at least not that I'm aware of, a physical test. It's not like having a lab test. It's generally diagnosed through a series of behaviors or that you're having, such as nightmares, stress levels, anxiety levels, eating disorders, numbing, vulnerabilities. In other words, it's more like, how are you living your life? How does it what you're experiencing interfere with your life?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, somebody else was speaking. Did I talk on top of them?
No, you're not talking on top of anyone. Can you make yourself a little clearer? You know, like, do you have your speakers on?
I'm not sure what it is. I was even thinking about switching to my phone to see if it would be better. I'm having trouble.
Yeah, it's echoing. Yeah.
Am I echoing?
I think you're echoing.
Give me 20 seconds to make a switch, and let me see if I can get
go
it.
Ahead. Go ahead.
Groups.
Go ahead.
So talk amongst yourselves, right?
Yeah, okay, no problem.
I thought you were talking to me, Carol. I thought you were asking me that question.
Yeah, no, that's something like, you know, it's something that we speak about quite often, actually. That sounds a lot better already, whatever you did. When people, you know, have trauma in their lives, it comes out in all different ways, Peter. And you don't have to have blood tests for that. It is more of a psychological profile, okay, where, you know, you're asked.
I was going to say how it's diagnosed is from the DSM, which is the Diagnostic Manual.
Right.
The Diagnostic Manual of, you know, and it's, you have to have certain symptoms, and the social worker will, you know, go into the book and ask the person, you know, what they're experiencing, and then according to the Diagnostic Manual,
mm-hmm.
you know what I'm talking about.
That's like the Bible explained to him. That's like a Bible to the doctors, the DSM, okay? And they have all different diagnoses and so forth that people have problems, and it goes into a lot much more than that. But that's like the doctor's manual, his Bible. That's what he goes by, or she goes by.
I mean, if I go to see a doctor, my doctor's going to say, "How do you know you got PTSD? Who diagnosed you with PTSD?" You know, I'm confused. So does that mean anything that, I don't know, I'm confused. You know, I do have a lot of these flashbacks and all that, but, you know, as C-3PO says on Star Wars, I'm so confused.
Well, Dr. Higgins, Sharon, this is Pamela.
Hello, Pamela.
Can people have PTSD in recovery, and like myself, I don't have that anymore. I don't have triggers. I just you know, I've recovered, so I wouldn't call my, I'd call myself post PTSD, you know. Yeah, so I was wondering, maybe somebody, you know, going through it right now, or, you know, or somebody's past it, or somebody's going into it, or, you know, it's not like, you know, you can just say you have PTSD. I mean, I wouldn't be considered right. having it right now. So how
right.
do y'all deal with that?
Well, you know, I'd like to say something about that, because it can be confusing. And I think if we can think of it as when we have been abused or have had a trauma, so many of the feelings and the memories and the reactions, though, are stored inside of us. As we go on, something jiggles that, and it comes forth, and it comes up, right? And then we have the symptoms that we're talking about. We have depression. We have anxiety. We have eating disorders. We have hypervigilance. I mean, I could go on, but we have these symptoms. And then at times, you know, we can go through the healing, Pamela, which is what you're talking about, and it brings it down. It's like brings the temperature down. And then sometimes things can sit there dormant, and then maybe something can trigger it, and it comes back up again. So it's kind of like the results of the trauma, Peter, that you encounter that can cause some havoc in your life later on. And it can come and go. And it can be, like you said, Pamela, I love that, post-traumatic. So many people work through their abuse, and then the symptoms go down. And they're quiet, and we're saying, wait, I don't have it at all. So, and for some people, it's a harder and a longer process, and it is usually diagnosed by somebody who is in the psychological community, psychologist, a counselor, a psychiatrist, or someone, sometimes by an MD, because they're seeing those symptoms are coming up at the present time. Sometimes, you know, what's asked is that therapy, counseling of some time, group therapy, possibly medication, to help get through the times when it's really rough. So it can be going on now. It can be quiet. It can be post, and it can be triggered. And it's all normal, too. It's normal for people who have gone through a traumatic event to have post-traumatic stress. I was hit by a car when I was 16. I was a pedestrian, threw me about 45 feet. You know, up over the car and out. And it was pretty nasty, 3 months in the hospital and so on. And after I came out of the hospital, because I was home and recovering and going through some rehab and so on, but whenever I would get into a car, and the car happened to hit me, it was at night, and I would see the headlights of another car coming, I would have symptoms. I would become very tense and very anxious, and I would be fearful. And it took a long time to get over that. Now I'm post, to use your words, Pamela. I can drive in a car at night. I don't react any more than anybody else would react. So it could be all kinds of different symptoms related to a trauma.
Mm-hmm.
I love post. I like that. That's good. Post-traumatic stuff.
And the other thing that I learned, I'm bipolar, and the other thing I learned was I'm not my disease, okay?
Mm.
My label. I'm not a label. Like, you know, if somebody has cancer, you're not cancer, okay?
That's right.
Just like PTSD, you know, you're not PTSD. You're having PTSD. So
that's
sometimes
right.
The stigma, yeah. So
that's so important. When I would do my groups for people who are sexually abused, I would always say, you know, you are not your molest, you are not your abuse. You know, you are someone who had that experience. You know, you are the same beautiful whole human being that you were before this happened. That's who you are, and this was something that was done to you, which you now have to, you know, you got to pull that thorn out of your foot, you know, and you got to heal that. You are not that, and so
absolutely
important to remember
right.
that. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So does that
it doesn't define us? No, I'm gonna get. I think it probably did. I'll get back to him. Let me get to Mark. I want him to be able to say hello, okay? Mark?
Oh, good evening. Yes. Well, Peter asked my question, so that was the first answer. But I came up with another question. Okay, I'll verify the fact that, yeah, Pamela is post-post traumatic stress, because we've been married 38 years, and I can attest to that. But my question, I think I'll ask generically for other people out there who have spouses, how do you think PTSD affects a relationship, especially a marriage relationship? Say someone isn't diagnosed just yet. What are some of the things that, say, a non-PTSD guy would look for, and how would they deal with it?
Wow, that is
a good question.
Oh, my God, what an important question that is, because
yes.
I don't think that we pay enough attention to the partners of people who have PTSD and what they go through. And I have to say that, I keep going back to this, but in my book, I do a whole section on that for partners, and I ask one of the men in my practice who was married to a woman who had been quite severely abused as a child, and he had dealings, of course, with the other family members and so on, and it was extremely difficult, and I said, would you mind writing your experience for the book, you know, just whatever you want to say, and he did, and it is in the book, and I have to say, wow, you know, I don't know if I was going to ask him what to do and if I would have picked that, because it's very raw about how, but so true about how hard it can be to deal with whatever the symptoms are, and it takes a tremendous amount of patience and support. And I just hats off to everybody who deals with it, and I also I think counseling. But how you know is because you're on the front lines experiencing the symptoms, right? I mean, Mark, I'm sure you were on front lines observing, and I don't know what her symptoms were or whatever before she was post, but. Our partners are the ones that experience it. They see a little bit of the irrationality that kind of says, wow, that this is coming from someplace. This is a little out of proportion for what's happening right now or today or this week, right? There's a certain level of that irrationality. And also, certainly it shows up in intimate relationships more than any place else. It shows up certainly in sexual relationships. It shows up just in day-to-day living, whether it's the depression or the anxiety, belief systems that come up. You can all speak to, you know, what your own experiences have been, or numbing, or anger issues that are spurred on by something that seems a little out of proportion for what's going on. And I think when you asked your question, Mark, I was so triggered because I just feel so strongly and have just so much gratitude, certainly for my own partners in my life who were going through my own healing process. And I got very depressed. And it was really tough, really, really tough. So I just have such high regard for all of you who stay with us and hopefully get your own support. And it's because of you, too, that holding our hands to this process. I'm just very grateful. I don't know if that answered your question, because I think what it did for me is my heart was just filled with gratitude for all of you who go through the healing process with us. And I don't think you get enough credit for what you do to help and support us through some of those dark nights of the soul that we all go through.
No, I think you answered it. Just fine. You know, I think that should help people who are listening too. You know, your answer for them as well, and that was what I was really getting at. Because, like I said, I can verify that Pam is post, so there's really we're not going through those things. But I was thinking of others who are just starting out and having that post. Traumatic, you know, and I know that it isn't just war, like you were saying, trauma, period, and like you had trauma with a car accident. There's plenty of children who have trauma with the various abuses that they've suffered, and that brings a lot of trauma, and that's, you know, I think we get past, I know I grew up in the age of the Vietnam War, and that's all we ever heard about. Well, everyone thought PTSD, you had to be in the service and so forth, but as the years go by, I've learned a lot different, and of course, Pamela being in social work and all that, I overhear some of the things she's studying and stuff, so, you know, it is a lot more open now, a lot more help for it, and it's not just singled out as one thing, you know, service people. It's traumatic, anything that goes through traumatic experiences. So I think you answered my question. Good.
Good. I just want to say one more thing that I meant to say, too. It's one thing that we're just learning research-wise is that children are actually more vulnerable to PTSD than are adults. And, you know, that's pretty stunning when you stop and think about it. It certainly makes a lot of sense in terms of the whole issue of resilience and so on. But the children are actually more vulnerable than are adults. So go ahead, Carol. I interrupted you.
No, that's okay. That's quite all right. It's good to know that, you know, that's something else that people can learn. It's not just adults. See, what people don't realize is, of course, when you go to war, I had people go to war in my family. I had friends that went to war. I had friends that were in Vietnam. And I'd sit and I'd watch that roll call every night. I don't know if you guys remember that, the roll call. And my God, I was scared to death that I would see someone on there that I knew, because I had a lot of friends that went to Vietnam, and it was a very frightening thing to, you know, some nights I wouldn't watch. I couldn't, you know. But the point is this. They came back. Most of them came back okay. One guy was really not okay. No one would have known him except for myself because we were very close in school, and we were just close. And the other people, I wasn't as close to, but one became a police officer, and then he became a captain, and he had no problems, and he was in the front line, and so were a lot of my friends in the front line. So they came back. Some of them had problems, some of them didn't, okay? And the ones that did have problems suffered terribly from PTSD. So this is how, you know, the war issue came in. But what people have to understand that are listening to this show, it's war, yes. Anything that's traumatic, all right, to a person, to a child, when a child is sexually abused, and then you have the complex of PTSD where it's time after time after time after time, which happened to be my case, time after time after time after time, it's harder to heal from situations like that. And to get onto the healing journey, you have to really get help, which I did do. And it was by counselors that I happened to know, and they were darn good ones. And they gave me a battery of tests, and I found that I wasn't crazy, and I found out that I was smart, and they told me to become a counselor, so that's what I did. But you see, this is what happens. It doesn't matter whether you're in war or whether you're a child who has been, you know, terribly abused. You many times suffer from PTSD. Yeah, you bet. It's terrible. And that's where the panic set in. Everything. Go ahead. Pamela, you go.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about personalities. PTSD, does it have anything to do with personality disorders?
Good question. This is kind of a chicken and the egg thing, isn't it? You know, does PTSD lead to personality disorders, or are personality disorders, you know, more biologically based as well as environmentally based, and which came first? And I don't really know the answer to that. I certainly have noticed that people who seem to have more difficulty in healing, there seems to be a combination of having a personality disorder. Oftentimes, personality disorders, for anybody who wants to know, it's a group of certain characteristics that can create certainly some dysfunction and certainly pain for the person who has a personality disorder. But some of the theorists believe that that's kind of set up in the early years, say before the ages of six. So if you have a personality disorder, which is, you know, an arrangement in a sense of how you perceive things in the world and how you react to it, and then if you have a trauma on top of that, right, that creates a tremendous difficulty for many people. And because you're having to kind of wield, you know, and work your way through a lot of that. And that's where, you know, skill therapy comes in too, where somebody can recognize if there is a personality disorder, that certain kinds of therapies could be more productive or more helpful and to help you kind of get through all of that. It's difficult, and especially, you know, what I've seen with people that have borderline personality disorder and so on, it can be very difficult to work with post-traumatic situations as well. So,
yeah, I was diagnosed with borderline. What is that exactly? Mm-hmm. I never really understood it well.
Well, it would take us a while to go into that. But one of the things that's difficult for borderline, and it's something that is created according to theories that I believe. You know, there's many theories about, you know, many different issues and so on. But basically, it's a set of characteristics that are set up when a child is around 2 or 3 years of age. And one of the ways to kind of explain it is, you know, when a child is starting to individuate and get thoughts of their own and kind of striking out, you see those 2 and 3 year olds, they go in the other room and they get something or they do something on their own, and then they come back to show you what they found or what they did, and you go, wow,
right,
big boy, big girl, go do that again, you know? And we encourage
right.
that separation, we encourage that becoming an individual and so on. Well, oftentimes in the case of a borderline, that gets the wires get crossed and the child gets punished for being who they are. So it's stay close to mommy, you can't do that, you don't know how to do that, oh, you know, you're not a big enough girl, or whatever it happens to be. I mean, it's a complicated kind of set. I'm simplifying it a little bit, but it's kind of a cross thing. So what happens later on in life is that life becomes a little tough, and it attempts to become an individual. There's a lot of self-esteem issues. There's difficulties in relationships oftentimes because wires are crossed in there in terms of our sense of who we are. And I know that's really simplifying it. And often you'll find depression there. Oftentimes you'll find some, and, you know, because the lack of self-esteem, it wasn't built in a healthy way. Does
okay.
that help?
That's
yeah.
perfect. Yeah, that's perfect. I understand
okay,
it a lot
good.
Better.
Yeah. good. I think it warrants probably more of a conversation that we're having. But anyway, so those kinds of things in terms of our sense of self, if you will, that's where the personality disorders come in terms of our sense of self. So, you know, you get some wires crossed as you're growing up, and then you get a trauma that occurs on top of that, right? So you've got this configuration of either symptomology or struggles or challenges that you have to deal with. So it can be tough. And, you know, if you have had that diagnosis, if it makes sense to you, I don't have to tell you that the healing process was tough, right? But then you
yeah, well, a lot of
post-traumatic stress.
A lot of times these psychiatrists diagnose you, but they don't tell you what it means. You're this. That's it.
It's
you know,
true.
You have this. Okay, well, that's fine. What is this? you don't get the psychoeducation you need, you know?
You know,
to understand yourself.
Exactly. And I think that everybody is entitled. It's just like if you get a physical diagnosis and somebody said, you know, you have, you know, something to do with your pancreas or something, you don't have the right to say, you know, well, where is my pancreas and what does this all mean, right? So I encourage people, too, if they're getting a diagnosis, like what makes you, you know, to your therapist, like, so what do you see in me that you would say that I have, that I have personality disorder, that I have diagnosis borderline, or, you know, or narcissistic, or, you know, whatever it happens to be. So ask.
Yeah. Well, I think you answered that quite well. You did, absolutely. Borderline personality disorder. At the Greystone Psychiatric, where I used to work, okay, you had people who are schizophrenic, and then you had people who suffer from, you know, bipolar. You have borderline personality disorders. And, of course, these are the people that are inpatient and they stay there for a long time. And quite frankly, I think a lot of them are over-medicated. That's why they called it the Thorazine Shuffle with the schizophrenics. Yes, with the schizophrenics. And they were given Mellorol and Novane and other types of medication, for hallucinating and so forth. But I think that if today things are different because you can, you don't have to go inpatient as long as you're not hurtful to yourself, you're not volatile in the sense where you're going to hurt others. And if they can give you the proper medication, you have your blood levels checked periodically, once a month is a good idea if you're taking the psychotropics. When you take those kinds of drugs, you should have your blood levels checked. And it's really something that can be controlled. It's controlling. Yeah. It can control you, keep you in check, all right? And you can live a relatively, normal life. You absolutely can if you do the right things. And and people don't like to have labels. I know this. I saw all different kinds of stuff when I worked there. I'm not a psychiatrist, but I was a state-certified technician. Took the same courses as the nurses and doctors did so that they could become a person that could work, you know, in the psychiatric field. But they went further because they handed out and dispensed medications. That's how I learned about it, so I worked with the psychiatrist. The borderline personality people of the three, they called it like an octopus. It has, like all the different arms. One day a person can be like see them like they're bipolar. It might last for a few days. And then all of a sudden they're like schizophrenic. And that'll last for several days, maybe even a week. And then they go back to being borderline personality. So they encapsulate the whole thing and say that they're borderline personality. They put it all together rather than to show the different parts. It doesn't matter. What matters is if you're comfortable on your meds. And there's no harm in taking meds. You know, people out there, if you're taking medicine for some sort of disorder, there is nothing to be ashamed about. It's worse to not get help, okay? It's much better to get help. Number one, you feel better as long as your meds are right. Sometimes it takes a while to do that. And secondly, you know, you're going to be happy. And with relationships, your relationships will actually improve, okay? A lot of people have problems with relationships that don't have anything, you know, like borderline personality disorders or schizophrenia or anything like that, the schizophrenics. And that usually shows up, if I believe, it's by the time they're 18, they realize whether a person is schizophrenic or not. And that usually jumps, it's supposed to. If you have a mother and father that's schizophrenic, you're going to be schizophrenic. But if you have one parent that's schizophrenic, then it's going to jump. And you might be lucky enough to get away with it, but it might hit somebody else in the family. So there's all kinds of things about the psychiatric world. And yes, they all do live by the DSM, because I used to watch them. Yeah. And it's very important to have that. But, you know, we who have been so abused in our lives, as many of us who have horrific stories, I'm not going to mention who on this panel, but I'm very happy that men are coming forward now. A lot of them are coming forward. And, you know, those who want help, let me just say something. Pamela knows why. Those who want help okay, can move forward if they have the proper counseling. They absolutely can. But if a person comes to you and they want to talk and you give them exercises to do, you goal plan, you make your goals for the individual, and they're not willing to do the work, then they're probably not going to get any further than where they're at now, okay? And they can stay stuck, as we call it on NASCA, and that's unfortunate. But those of us that are on the show, we've all had, I was tested. I went to a battery of tests, and that was the best high I ever had, I might add, because you see, when we're out there and we've been horribly abused, a lot of times we do turn to drugs and alcohol. That's unfortunate, but that's what happens because we're trying to numb ourselves out. We've seen too much, done too much, been through too much, and we want that terrible feeling of anxiety or depression or whichever, you know, you're suffering from at the time to go away. So many of us do turn to the drugs and to the alcohol. I certainly did, and then I stopped. When my fingers started to bloat and my kidneys started to pound, I said, okay, no more booze for me. So I had to be the happy, silly Carol, you know, that I am today without all of that. And I had to, like, learn how to be how I was because when I was drinking, I was a lot of fun. You know, I was always a clown. That's the way I am. You know, we all know this. So, you know, when I'm not speaking serious, I like to laugh a lot. And I think that laughing is a good therapy. If people can find,
yeah,
especially now, yeah, Sharon, especially now, when things are, oh, find something to laugh at. Oh, my God, I don't mean people either. I mean, you know, find a movie, something funny. Try to find funny things, fun things, because reality is here. We know what reality is right now, and reality is not very good. We don't know about COVID. We don't understand that. The scientists don't understand it either, okay? And that's what makes us very fearful, some people very fearful, because they don't know how to behave and not to behave. Then you have other people who are belligerent, okay? Don't tell me to wear a mask. I don't see anything, you know. I don't see guns. I don't see guns pointing at me. I don't see anybody chasing me, you know. It's fresh air. Well, maybe it is and maybe it's not. You see, there's no answers. So I get these phone calls. Sharon, in the middle of the night, I get these phone calls where people are scared to death. They have put themselves in their own homes for the last, one was 5 months, where they didn't go out at all. And they wonder why they're depressed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, see, we're going through very hard times. What's that?
Right.
I can't hear.
Yeah. Oh, I was talking to this Pamela. I was talking to an herbalist the other day, and she said that if you go out and sit in the sunshine before 10:30, because the UV start coming out after 10:30, but if you go and sit out in the sunshine in the morning, it tamps down depression. Is that true, Dr. Sharon?
Absolutely. Being outside and getting that sunshine, right, and looking at the spring that is starting to bloom right now, even if you have allergies, it is absolutely wonderful. And, you know, I'm not sure about the before 10 o'clock. Obviously, you have to be careful of the UV rays. But absolutely, being outside is one of the best and most inexpensive things that we can do for depression. That and moving our body. You know, if you can go for a walk, going for a walk is one of the best things for depression, to reduce anxiety, and also to overcome the fear and that the sense of being closed up. Now, you know, as you know, we in California have been under pretty severe restrictions, and where I live, we've been quite severe restrictions, and it just opened up for us this week. And for the first time, I did go to a restaurant. And I have to tell you, talk about being on a high. It was like in your best drunk, Carol. I mean, I felt that we were the only ones in this little neighborhood restaurant that we really wanted to support, right? And it was the windows were open, the doors were open. We were sitting at a little table.
We're the only ones in the whole place, and we had a bowl of soup, and I have to tell you, it was an amazing high because it was that sense of normalcy. But yes, it's been tough. We don't know. We know the numbers are getting better. We know that masks help. We know that distancing helps. And we also know that common sense helps. We have to remember that common sense helps. Even though, you know, depending on your age and your pre-existing conditions or whatever it is you need to take care of yourself, do that. But also know that for most of us, we can walk around the block, which really helps us. We can keep in touch with people, which is very important to have support and to laugh. I'm with you. You know, funny movies, you know,
are wonderful, you know.
And whatever gives us pleasure, you know, it's a time that because things are like they are on the outside, we're dealing more with how we are on the inside. But it's like to find out what gives you pleasure and to do that. I've been writing novels. I've been having a wonderful time creating an imaginary world where there's no pandemic and there's only murder. I'm writing mystery novels and just enjoying my world of make-believe, you know, and being creative. My husband's doing the sourdough bread thing. You know, we're having fabulous bread and probably gaining too much weight, but he's just having a lot of fun baking sourdough bread with a starter, by the way, that is from yak butter from India that a friend of mine brought, lived in Nepal in India probably 35, 40 years ago and brought over a starter from this yak milk, literally, and she sent me via airmail some of this starter. And we're making sourdough bread. I mean, isn't that amazing that this bread is coming from starter, from yak milk back in Nepal, you know? Never would have happened without a pandemic, you know?
Absolutely. Well, people have to become creative. You know, this is what I say, you know. You have to become creative during this time, okay? Because we can't go out and about like we used to. I can understand what you're saying about going out and eating. I've done that several times, you know, with family members. And it is a feeling like I never enjoyed it so much before because, you know, before you take it for granted, you know. And now it's like something special to do, and so you go out. I also like to take rides. I'll take a ride, you know, if I feel like I'm coming down, I'm like feeling low or whatever. Or I do have hobbies. We all know I love jewelry. We all know this. And I work a lot with my jewelry and so forth and so on. And, you know, so I work with that. And I know an awful lot about jewelry because I've been collecting jewelry for years. Okay. When I was a kid, I used to take stones and smash them because I wanted to see what was inside of that stone. And if I found mica, oh, my God, I thought I found diamonds. Okay, you know. it's things. We have to be creative and, and keep in touch with each other, you know, by phone. I don't believe it's good to go in large gatherings, although things are starting to get a little bit less. I had a test the other day, a COVID test, because I came in touch with someone who, in his family, there was someone who very possibly had COVID and or has COVID, and unfortunately he does have it, and he's older. I mean, this is bad. And but the kid doesn't have it, and I don't have it. So, you don't know who's going to get it, your immune system and everything. So we live under this terrible, like, veil. I call it like a veil. Because that's what it is. It's like a veil. So in order to push through that veil, we have to find things that are going to make us happy, you know, and so that we can be a happier person until we get through this, until we get through it.
Yeah.
So, Carol, do you think COVID is having anything to do with abuse? I mean, like people that are trying to heal from people that are adults that are trying to heal from child abuse, do you think COVID has some kind of connection with that somehow? Is it hindering it or is it helping it?
Yes.
I mean, I know a lot of I know a lot of therapists are able to do telehealth now, and so people mm-hmm. who may not have considered therapy would consider, you know, because of the stigma, would probably consider sitting at home talking to somebody rather than going into mm-hmm. a doctor's office who is a therapist mm-hmm. and thinking, I don't want nobody to see me coming in here, you know.
I think that's true. I think people are trained to telehealth and so on, and I personally encourage that. And I think the fact that because we are staying at home more, I think we are facing people. Number one, there's an increase in abuse, so we have to get that. We have to say that there's been an increase in all kinds of abuse, emotional abuse, domestic violence, sexual abuse. Mm. All the numbers are going up, and that's a tragedy. And it's very understandable because of the fact that we are confined and we're here and there's stress and all the reasons that go into why it happens in the first place. And we're locked in and we don't have a lot of opportunity to get out and sleep. So there is that. The other thing is that for people who have been abused, because we're here and we're with ourselves and a lot of the things that we did to distract ourselves are no longer there. Sometimes we're forced to look inside, but I have a really positive viewpoint on that. I've had clients throw pillows from the couch at me when I say this, but it is also an opportunity. You know, a lot of times when these situations happen that force us to look at ourselves, it's an opportunity, and it says we have the ego strength to do it. I have very rarely in my practice seen anybody come in feeling very positive saying, you know what the good news is? The good news is I'm going to work on my sexual abuse. Usually people come in and they are depressed and they have been fighting it and they're having nightmares and they're having a lot of symptomology we talked about earlier, the post-traumatic stress symptomology, the numbing out, the difficulties in relationship, all of that. It's what brings them in and brings them to their knees, because most of us would not voluntarily say, you know what, it's a nice day outside. I think what I'm going to do is sit out there and work on my abuse. You know, that's something we don't want to do. But this is another opportunity to be able to look at any of our unfinished business, and especially our unfinished business and relationship, because here we are, whether we are single or we're in a partnership, we are confronting issues around relationship, right? Who's important, mm-hmm. who's not, how much do we need it? Do we have the courage to reach out to somebody and say, man, I'm struggling with this whole pandemic thing, you know? A lot of relationship mm-hmm. yeah. issues coming up right now, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. There are so many people I've spoken to, you know, recently, excuse me, honey, I thought you were done, that are having problems with their relationships in their homes because not even thinking about sexual abuse, I'm talking about so-called normie homes. Before everything was fine, everybody went their own way, they did their own thing, they'd meet at dinner time, have a nice dinner, watch some TV together, whatever they were doing, and a new day is dawning, okay, it's going to be coming the next day. Now you have people where they have to stay in the house in some areas. All states are different. You have different areas. Some people are starting the children to go back to school. I think that's a much better thing. They found that the immune system of a child is stronger than that of someone who is older. And if children should go to school, they should go to school because they're not getting taught right at home. A lot of people don't know how to teach children, okay? And yet they're expected to be teachers at home. This is causing grief. It's causing more stress on the people in the house who are trying to be the teachers. I'm going through it in my own family with a couple of family members. And so, you know, it's very difficult. It's very difficult. And the kids, they're home. They want to play. You know, they don't want to do schoolwork. So that makes stress right there. And then if the husband still has a job, okay, if he is actually out working, and he comes home to a stressed out house. He's stressed out because maybe he's going to lose his job soon. A lot of places had closed down. Look at the unemployment rate. It went sky high again. That wasn't Trump's fault. That was the fault of the COVID. Okay, get it straight. So, you know, people have to understand that they have to, with their children, it's good for children to be more creative also. Let them draw. Let them run around and play cowboys and Indians. What's it going to do to the house? You know, come on. You can clean it up. Have arts and crafts. Kids love to have arts and crafts. They love to sit and finger paint and things like that. You know, be a little bit more creative. Let them be children. Because if the children aren't happy, the parents aren't happy. Okay, trust me. And, you know, so, and then with the, as far as the studies, just do the best you can because you're not a teacher, but, you know, you can, you know, they help you to try and teach the kids. The kids are the ones that are suffering horribly because those that come from the homes that are very abusive, they're terribly dysfunctional homes, they don't even have school to go to where maybe they can get some peace, okay? And the suicide rate has gone way up with the teenagers. And actually, they start at age 12, and they don't try to actually, they're looking for help, all right? They'll take the pills. If a person truly wants to kill themselves, and I hate to put it this way, but they're more apt to hang themselves, okay? Look at Robin Williams. Of course, he wasn't a kid. He was, you know, I loved him. I thought he was great. And David Carradine, another one, okay, he hung himself. This is the way it is, you know. If people are really serious, that's what they do. I unfortunately have lost people in my distant family, you might say. One was 18. He hung himself. You see, when they do that, in fact, I lost two that hung themselves. And so the world that we live in is not a good world. And if we can go out and be peaceful and be kind to each other, all right, soup kitchens, you know, could use certain, you know, help. Work in the in the places that have food banks. You know, if you feel like you're displaced, you have nothing to do, you're in the house. For heaven's sake, put a mask on, and you can go out and do a little bit of volunteer work. That does help. Okay, absolutely, and it makes you feel better. So that's another suggestion. If you can help your neighbor one way or another, this is good also. Just be careful. Wear your mask. I believe in the mask. Okay? I absolutely do. So anyway, I wanted to talk a little bit about I have a lot of feedback here. Healing steps. A gentle path to recovery for survivors of childhood sexual abuse written in a workbook format with exercises. Why don't you tell us about the exercises? I give out some to. I tried that last night to someone for them to go by. What exercises would you give out to people?
Well, you know, the book is divided into 7 steps, and each step kind of takes off from the one before. And the whole point of it is that there are seven major areas of healing. And so the first one being breaking the silence means having the courage to tell somebody. We all know the power of secrecy and what happens when the secret is held, right, and internalized. And so there are exercises at the end of step one. It talks about why you should to break the silence, how to do it. How do you know who you can trust and you not trust? Because we all know that trust is the foundation of any relationship, right? It's the basis of how we are in our lives. Do we trust this planet? Do we trust this country? Do we trust our friends? And so the whole idea of being able to learn how to trust and to be trustworthy, because it's a two-way street. So there are exercises on how to get in touch with that part of yourself that was traumatized, and this is for any kind of a trauma, but it's obviously specified to sexual abuse in the book. So there are exercises about how to break the silence, how to tell somebody, how to write a letter to somebody. This is not about the perpetrator. This is about sharing your secret and your life and your story with somebody else. Now, I should have put in there about NASCA, right, that you can call and talk to somebody at NASCA, which is a fabulous way of taking that first step is to call and to say, I'm just here tonight and I'm a survivor. And maybe that's the first step for you. And maybe the next time is like, well, I can share a little bit about my story, or I can say that I was a victim of domestic violence, or I can talk about how I was emotionally abused as a child and find out that it's safe. And I don't know a safer place than certainly calling it Tanaska. So each step has exercises all the way from the first to the last. The last step, by the way, has to do with the whole topic of spirituality and connecting, you know, with ourselves in a way that is loving, and forgiveness, which is obviously a big issue. And it's not about should you or should you not, but it presents both sides and gives you some exercises about what that means. So as you go through the steps, there are specially designed exercises. And one of the things that I did want to mention is I've been getting a lot of emails lately from people who have looked at the book and said, I want to take a workshop, or how can I do, you know, one of your workshops. And I am not, I just wanted to say I'm not doing them anymore. However, I really urge people, if they're as one way of healing, is get together. You know, since one out of every four women have been sexually abused, one out of every six men, and we all know that those numbers are probably lower because it's a secret that people don't tell. And if you can find somebody else and connect with somebody else, and it can be, you know, via Zoom, it can be on the telephone, and say, let's do this first step together. Let's read about it. Let's do the exercises. Then let's talk about it together. That's huge because what we all know, and certainly the reason that NASCA is having so many people call in and pay attention to it, is that healing can really be, it's intensified, but it can be escalated when you're not doing it alone. It does not have to happen in isolation. The abuse almost always happens in isolation, right? But healing does not have to happen in isolation. So if you can reach out to somebody, and if you don't know somebody in the same circumstance, I mean, any kind of trauma, you can do the healing together. It's to do it, you know, do it yourself, and then maybe even, you know, in your conversation, if you are calling in or if you're reaching out or you have a friend that you can say, I'm going to do these exercises. Can I kind of run by you? Most of us have somebody that would be willing to say, sure, you know? So don't feel like you have to do it alone. Yeah, do it alone. So the exercises as you go through the book are whatever the top, post-traumatic stress is certainly a topic. Relationships. I don't know why, but my favorite chapter happens to be chapter 6, which is about relationships. Because what we don't know, and what Mark brought up earlier, was about what about how does abuse show up in a relationship? If you've been abused in the past, how does it show up in a relationship? How can somebody be a partner to someone? And what do you do if your partner is going through depression or having nightmares or is being hypervigilant or is numbing out or is rejecting you or all the things that can happen? I mean, it's no accident. Right. The people who have been abused and haven't been healed, we choose certain partners. And those partners is not because, oh, my God, why do I have such bad luck? It's because there's a part of our unconscious that is selecting that person to give us, again, an opportunity for us to work through our stuff, right, and to learn how to set boundaries and to say no thank you or whatever it is that we need. So the chapter on relationship has a lot of really good information. And it looks at what we've learned, because I think our belief systems that we form when we've been through trauma are incredibly important and have to be confronted, because most of the time they are being formed by that part of us that's not really equipped to make some big decisions. You know, like all men want is sex. Probably one of the most common ones formed by women who have been sexually abused. So it's like looking at our belief systems, looking at where they come from, looking at what we learned from our parents, you know, just looking at all of those things, taking the time to do that and saying, so how does all of that affect me today? And then there are exercises to help you sort that out and to hopefully heal and be stronger and be more of who you really are as a result of the whole process.
That's very good. I usually tell people, that the couple should go and get, therapy. Sometimes it's not always together.
Right.
Mostly it's, But then at times it's good to have your partner there with you. So the partner has more understanding of, how their wife or their husband who's been abused, why they're acting that way and how can you deal with it and how should they deal with it. So, and boundaries is very important, and that's a very necessary thing. Hey, I don't like it when people stand and cuss at me, okay? If they cuss at me, I want to slap them. I'm telling you how I am, okay? Bang, get out of here, because I don't deserve it, okay? I didn't do anything to you. Don't cuss at me. So I had to go through that, and I did smack people. I didn't care. But anyway, the point is this, It's very good that people write books, they write books, and they have workshops. I mean, Pamela also, too, has a workshop book. And so her book, I read it, and it's very good, and she, too, has her workshop book, and I think that's important. I'm seeing more workshop books come out to go along with the actual book itself. And I think that's a very good idea because, at 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, what happens is people don't have someone to talk to unless they call me. I think there's one other night owl, but I'm not sure if she's still on the list there. But the point is at 3 o'clock in the morning, you need a book or something. You need steps, okay? You need the steps.
Yes. Yes,
and something to guide you. Yes, absolutely. And if you don't have someone to call, then these books are very, very important, okay? So, I really applaud people who put their books, their stories out there. Mine was a memoir, one company turned it down. They said it was too volatile, but I told the truth, and some people don't like that, because they cower from it. However, I think it's getting better today because I wrote my book like 10 years ago, and now people are getting they're talking more about child abuse. It is happening.
Yes.
But we still need – we have a long ways to go, absolutely, a long ways to go. So
exactly.
This is important. One thing I do want to bring up, too, before I get to back to Pamela, that I want to speak about, is everyone out there, our website is very, very good, okay? I'm impressed with this website. I use it when I do, presentations, which I couldn't do this year because of COVID. Come on, we're having all kinds of problems. And, but it's the NASCA, NASCA.org, NASCA.org. And if you look at that website, you can get an awful lot of information out of that, okay, a lot of information out of that. So especially under the red lines and over to the left you have programs. If you, first of all, you're not alone, okay? There's people out there that feel like they're alone, their story is so bad. How could anybody else have such a terrible story, that's not how we measure things on NASCA, number one. If you were abused once, it's too much. And some people can't even handle one time. So picture those of us who have been abused time after time after time where the complex PTSD comes in and so forth and so on. And, it's a very difficult journey to take, but you can heal if you want to heal, and you do have to do the work. It's as simple as that. And don't be afraid to look at yourself and say, hey, I screwed up. I did this. I did that, because none of us are perfect. And if we don't have boundaries in our own home, okay, if the mother and so-called father, mothers, whatever, don't give us boundaries, which is really nurturing if you think about it. Children feel much more secure if they have boundaries. If they don't have boundaries in the home, then they're going to go out and they're going to run the streets. It's as simple as that. And if there's abuse at home where children are being sexually abused, which many of us have been, I was, and there's many of us that were abused at home too, then they're definitely going to go out and run those streets. They're going to do that. They're going to get into trouble. I watched two people die in front of me. They OD'd right in front of me. I couldn't do a thing for them. They were foaming at the mouth, and the cops were coming. What am I supposed to do? I'm a kid. What did I do? I ran. Nothing else I could do, and it haunted me for years, for years. And who wants to live like that, okay? So, you know, we have to, society has to change. And another thing, too, we have to change ourselves because we cannot stop what happened to us. We cannot change what happened to us. It happened, but we're still standing. And, you know, so if you need help, go get help. Certainly find yourself a therapist. You can therapist shop, absolutely. And remember, the therapist works for you. You don't work for the therapist. Yes, you give them information out, but remember, if you're not happy with your therapist, you can find another one, okay? And on the website, we have the programs. Many people have a therapist and are a part of a program. You just go into that program area, open it up, no matter what state you're from, click onto it, and go down the line, go down the list. You might go by county or city, whichever, and find one near you. Because a lot of times there's two or three that you can actually choose from, and that's even better, okay, that you can do that. So, you know, you're never alone. You have the contact list. You have programs. You have people that come to our shows. There are wonderful people like Sharon tonight. She has her own story, which we didn't get into, and she is a licensed psychotherapist for over 35 years with individuals. I had posted it. Don't feel bashful at shows like this, but you can't shock any of us because most of us have been through everything. Okay, enough about that. Pamela, I know you have something you wanted to say, and we only have 3 minutes left, I think. So did you want to say something?
I want to thank our guest tonight, Dr. Sharon. You gave us a whole load of information, and you put it on our on the educational level that we could understand, because we know your educational level way above ours. But I want to say that Dr. Lori Pitts is on tomorrow night, so everybody tune in tomorrow night for Dr. Lori Pitts.
Okay. All right. Well, we have, we have 2 minutes left, according to my clock, if it's right. I don't know. What would you leave with the people, Sharon, about hope? I always like to have people talk about hope. What hope do we have?
Okay. I have a few lines of a little poem. I'd like to end with that. And it's about hope. Mm-hmm. It says, the past exists only in memory, consequences, effects. It has power over me only as I continue to give it my power. I can let go, release it, move freely. I am not my past. The future is not yet. I can fear it, flee it, face it, embrace it, and be free to live now. And that's the hope. That's the hope.
That was
beautiful. I can be free.
Wish I could clap.
That was you can clap if you want.
Can.
Go ahead. I don't care. That was, there you go. Well, that sounded real good in my ear. Yeah. Whoa. All right. Yeah.
You
but anyway.
Me I could, so what's there,
yeah,
you know?
I know that. I know. I won't do that again. That was funny. All right. Let me tell you something. Yeah, we have 90 seconds. Sharon, if you would like, you can send that, and we could post that. Because everyone needs hope.
Yes.
Maybe you could send it to Pamela, and she'd know where to put it, okay? And so that people can see that, because if ever, that's a funny way to put it. Put it, okay, there you go. Put it somewhere, by God. But anyway, she can post it. She can post
it.
Oh, you put it and post it at the same time. There you go. But anyway, I really like that a lot, and we do need hope right now. That's something that we all do need. So thank you so much for coming on. We had a very, very good show. And I said earlier, and I even had posted, that I always like it when you come on. So good for you. Thank you so much.
Thank
and
you.
And I received
so much.
Your email. Yes, yes.
Good.
I did receive your email. And I again, thank you so much. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, and thank you all so much. Thank you for allowing me to come and visit with you tonight. I always enjoy it. I always learn something.
Well, you did a fine job, and we always learn something from you, okay? And that's what's important. Okay, thank you so much. And so I have to end the show now. This thing is blasting in my ear. Good night, everybody. I love you. We will talk to you again soon.
You are forgotten after all that you've done.
End episode. Boop, 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 boop. It's not working.